When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
It's your inside pass to everything Saints football.
See you later, bye. Touchdown, Rashid Shaheed.
We'll take you to places most fans never go. To practice, to the sideline, to the locker room. Following every twist, turn, and touchdown of the Saints season.
That is going to be a touchdown, Taysom Hill. Taysom TD.
Welcome to Inside Black and Gold.
To the end zone, and that is a touchdown for Chris Olave.
Now, here are your hosts, Steve Geller and Jeff Nowak.
Oh, baby!
What is up, and welcome in. This is a live episode of Inside Black and Gold. I am Jeff Nowak, your solo host for today. Steve is going to be on the radio in about 30 minutes, so you got to tune in over to WWL to catch up with Steve. I wanted to get a live chat in here because we haven't done one in a while, and you know, we went over a lot of mock draft stuff last episode, so we don't have to do that this time. We went over breakout players last episode. The mock draft was two episodes ago, so I don't want to go through mock drafts that we did today. I want to go through mock drafts that a lot of other people did. So we're going to talk into that. We're going to dive into a lot of Saints topics. And I also wanted to get into a mailbag in the second or third segments. I don't know how many people are going to have interest in a mid-afternoon live stream. Maybe people driving in their cars shouldn't watch a YouTube video. But that's neither here nor there. We're gonna get into it again. My name is Jeff Nowak, and we are getting closer and closer and closer to the 2024 draft. And so what I like to do this time of year is stop answering the question myself and start looking at all the other answers that are out there in terms of who are the Saints going to pick at number 14. They have picks at 14, 45, and then they don't pick again until 150. So these seven-round mock drafts aren't exactly as exciting this time of year as they might be in other years, because we're only talking about two guys maximum, unless you do a trade, and mock draft trades are always crazy. So what I do is I go to NFL Mock Draft Database. It's a great website. I've been using it for years. Guy just improves it every year, and it just collects mock drafts from everywhere. It's a perfect place to go for the thing I'm trying to do, which is I went through 40 individual mock drafts. And if you want to follow along with these, you can go check out the article on WWL.com that lists every single one. I went through them exhaustively. And why I do this is because I'm trying to figure out, okay, who are the most common picks at any particular draft slot, particularly for the Saints? And so what I found in this is I pulled down 40 different mock drafts, and it became very clear that there was one very specific favorite, and it became clear from the first one to the 10th one to the 15th one. And that is Olufashanu, the offensive tackle for Penn State. At this point, you know, going into this draft process, he might have been a name a lot of people didn't know. He's quickly becoming a household name for Saints fans who look at it and say, okay, need a left tackle. There's a left tackle. Let's bring him in. And I think it is that simple. He would not be my pick if my pick was on the table. So that would be Taliese Fuanga, who was the second most mocked player to the Saints. He had seven selections out of these 40. Troy Fitanu was the third most selected. He was in five different mock drafts. But all in all, there were 34 tackle prospects taken out of these 40 mock drafts at number 14. So whoever you land on at number 14, it's pretty clear that there's a very, very wide-reaching idea that the Saints desperately need an offensive tackle in this draft. It's a situation that most teams would rather not be in, because you want to be the team that has the ability to say, wow, Brock Bowers is still on the board. We'd love to go get him, and not have to be like, well, if we do that, Derek Carr is going to get his head taken off because you're going to have a turnstile standing out at the tackle position. So I agree with that. What I don't agree with is necessarily the reasoning. And in going through a lot of these mock drafts, I went through the explanations for every single one. And at least in 80% of them that took Fashanu, you saw Trevor Penning's name mentioned. You say, hey, Trevor Penning isn't working out. We're going to replace him with this guy. Ready-made starter from day one. And that's what I would say for Fashanu. If I was making the argument for Olu Fashanu at number 14 for the Saints, it is that as a pure pass-protecting tackle prospect, I think he probably is the best of the bunch. Now, that's what you'd call a high-floor pick. And the thing is, if you are looking at this and saying, we need someone who can start on day one, this is the guy. Olu Fashanu is the guy. He might not even be on the board at number 14. We're all just spitballing, but in a lot of these mock drafts, he ends up there. And, you know, while teams don't have to do what the mock drafts say, and they almost never do, it does give you a good idea of how analysts and people who are observing the situation feel about what players would be there, what players will land where, and you go from there. But I do think it's missing a critical element here, which is the Saints aren't going to draft a guy because he's ready to start on day one. In order to do that, you would have to assume that, hey, they're giving up on Trevor Penning entirely, because you're looking at a left tackle prospect and you're saying he might have a low ceiling, but we're going to draft him because we need him to start right away. And I get the logic, but when you look at how this team drafts, it's almost certainly not going to be that logic. Now, if you get to 14 and he's the best option and he does fit what the Saints are trying to do with their prototypes, right? You're talking 6'6", 312 pounds, 34-inch arms. You're in a 5'11", 40-yard dash. He's got really good technique, but you would classify him as a weaker athlete on the spectrum in terms of what he's able to do in the run game. You know, what is his profile and how can he develop over time? I think your ceiling's a lot lower than a guy like Fuanga, who, again, another guy who might not be on the board at this point. So a lot of your decisions won't necessarily matter in terms of why you're making them, because the board's going to make a majority of them for you. If you end up getting to this spot with the ability to choose between those two guys, then you've already won, because you're just going to go with the guy that you like the best. And I think that's what you're looking at here. And I do think that when you're looking at the Saints, you do need to understand that they're not bailing on Trevor Penning. So they're not going to make a draft pick with that in mind. They're not, whether you think he can work out a tackle or not, they're not bailing on Trevor. So that won't be the reason they make this pick. I think people are taking too much time and paying too much attention to the left tackle position and not paying enough attention to the right tackle position in this draft. People are looking at it and saying, well, he's the best left tackle prospect, so I'm going with Olu Fashanu. I'm looking at it and saying, I think the Saints need a right tackle more than they need a left tackle. Because I think it's pretty bleak with Ryan Ramczyk in terms of what your expectations are. And I don't think he's going to be able to get through a season, even if he is ready to play, even if he is able to get back and play this season. I don't expect him to be able to get through a season. So I need to have his backup in place. So that's why I gravitate more toward Fuanga, who the only real drawback that I see a lot of people say is he's a right tackle. He's a guy who you're going to sit at right tackle. Now, there are questions. You're not getting a perfect prospect at number 14. You know, over time, maybe you decide, hey, this guy is a guard, right? He could profile the guard. And it's tough. You look at Andres Pete. You took him at, I think, 13 overall, which is the same range. You drafted him as a tackle. You kicked him into guard. He was a three-time Pro Bowler at guard. So it's not the end of the world if that's what ends up happening. But I do think that the reason people are landing on Fashanu is wrong. Like, you can argue to me that he is the best option at that spot, but it should not be, hey, they're not going to trust Trevor Penning, because I do think this team is going to give him every opportunity to play. And it might be a dumpster fire and you might have to change course, but I think that's what you're going to see this season. Moving on, I want to go through the top 30 visits that we know about, right? Just to tie off this segment. And, you know, the funny thing about the top 30 visits is we get to draft day and we maybe know 10, 12, some teams a little bit more, some teams fewer. So you see, okay, this guy visited here, this guy visited here, they had a workout with him. In almost every case, you're going to have a top 30 visit devoted to a player that you're drafting. if you're taking a guy in the first round, the second round, even in, you know, the third or fourth round, get to the fifth round. You want to have had visits with these guys. So if you look at the top 30 visits from last year, only the ones we knew about, which is about nine of them, Kendre Miller, Jake Haener, and Jordan Howden were on that list. So you talk about a team, hey, if you make nine draft picks and we know six of the players that you've had in for visits, there's a pretty good chance that one of these players, one or more of these players, is on that list. So I do want to go through it because there's a good chance that of these names I mentioned, one or more of them gets drafted by the Saints. So the first one is Chop Robinson. Now, Chop is intriguing because I don't know if he necessarily fits the mold of what the Saints want to do at defensive end, or at least what they have done at defensive end. He's a little smaller. He's 6'3", 254. It doesn't sound small, but it is when you consider that the Saints will typically go for guys in the 270, 280 range at defensive end. And you can make the argument that the game has kind of passed them by in that regard. You know, some of these bigger body defensive ends are not able to track and tackle the mobile quarterbacks. And we've seen the Saints struggle with mobile quarterbacks. Maybe this is the time you look at that. I don't think that he's in play at 14, but I think he would be in play at 45. So if Chop gets to 45, I look at him. You know, Penn State, he was not particularly productive in college. So you kind of try to figure out, okay, what is the vision for this guy? Moving on to the next one, Keon Coleman. He's very intriguing to me because I've talked a lot about how I think the Saints need to add another big-bodied wide receiver. Whether you do that through free agency or the draft, you can make an argument, but there just aren't that many NFL-capable big wide receivers on the free agent market that you could really expect in terms of, I think they need veteran leadership, and I would settle for a Hunter Renfrow and drafting your bigger-bodied guy. But I think Keon Coleman certainly would qualify. The only question for me with Keon is whether he's actually there at 45. I've seen him kind of vary a good bit in terms of what you might see for a draft slot. I've seen him go late first round. I've seen him go all the way in the third round. But you're talking about 6'3", 213 pounds. He had a 4.61 40-yard dash, 38-inch vertical leap. He's not going to blow you away with athleticism, but he's going to be a guy that makes catches in the middle of the field, makes catches in traffic. He's a Louisiana guy, so if you want that in your repertoire, go for it. 108 catches, 656 yards, and 18 touchdowns over the last two seasons. And I think he would make a lot of sense. I do think you still need to add to that wide receiver room. As much as you like Chris Olave, Rashid Shaheed, A.T. Perry, no one's going to complain about adding talent on a talent. Kind of run through these next couple. You had Christian Mahogany. He's a guard from Boston College. And, you know, I should have mentioned this at the top. I did write all these up. So, again, if you want to follow along, I am going in the same order I wrote the article in. So, if you go over to WBL.com, you'll be able to find a write-up of each of these players and some information about them. These are all reported from independent sources. You know, Mahogany, he's an upside guy. He's a potential backup, in my opinion. He ran a 5.13 in the 40, 6.3, 314 pounds. I think he's probably a day two or day three guy. So I think this is kind of the range where, not unlike Nick Saldivari last year, if you are looking at those fifth round picks and they're burning a hole in your pocket and you're sitting there at the end of the third round, and you're like, hey, you know, I got a good look at Christian Mahogany. I like the name. I enjoy the wood. And I'm going to go for it. I think he's a guy you could target in that range like you did Saldivari last year. The next guy on the list, Marshawn Kneeland. And what makes Marshawn Kneeland really interesting to me is, you know, you look at some of these visits and you say, okay, why are you bringing this guy in? In a lot of instances, it's because you didn't necessarily get a good enough look at him at the combine, at the Senior Bowl, right? And so I probably should have explained this at the top. You're talking about top 30 visits. So every team gets an opportunity to bring in 30 draft prospects for a private meeting and work out whatever you want to do. There's some confusion with the name top 30 visit because I think a lot of people read that as this is a guy they expect to go in the top 30. No, it could be literally anybody. It could be a guy you're looking at as a UDFA, but you just want to get a better look at them. And so you bring them in and you can only do that so many times. There are limits on that. Now, so there are some exceptions, right? So if a school is within 75 miles of the team, you can bypass that and a visit from that player would not count against your top 30 visit. It might be 50 miles either way. Tulane is really the only notable school that the Saints would get visits from that you would get away with. So there's no reason not to meet with every single Tulane player who could be a potential target in the draft. So I would be very surprised. I know they met with Willie Fritz before he went out of town. They got some insight on these players. I'm sure they're going to have a visit from Michael Pratt, guys like Jaquan Jackson. But they're not going to be on these top 30 visit lists. There are a lot more players that they met with at the combine, whatever. The reason I bring that up is you brought in Marshawn Nealon for a visit, but you had all the data points you really needed. You saw him at the Senior Bowl. You saw him at the combine. I'm sure they met with him at one or both of those events. So why would you bring him in for a visit, for a workout, unless you were very, very serious about drafting him? And this is a guy that I would not be surprised if he's in play at number 45. Maybe he slips into the third and he's kind of like Mahogany. You package together a couple picks and go get him. But if Marshawn Nealon's name comes on the board at number 45, don't sit there saying, "Who? I can't believe they drafted this no-name guy out of Western Michigan." Because they're here kind of showing you their interest, right? So I can hear the criticism already. This is Peyton Turner all over again. Whatever. Obviously, Peyton Turner was a first, but he was a late first as opposed to kind of an early to mid second. But when you see a team scout a guy at the Senior Bowl, scout a guy at the combine, and then also bring him in for a visit, you know, they're trying to tell you something. And he's an interesting guy. Again, he's 6'3", 267. So in that same Chop Robinson range, 4.75 in the 40-yard dash. Yeah, he was productive this past season. He had 57 tackles, 4.5 sacks, 2 forced fumbles. I think he can get out into coverage a little bit more than some of their other defensive ends. He's very athletic. You know, I'd liken him to Foskey. I think this would be a similar pick to an Isaiah Foskey from last year. Take that for what it is. But it is interesting. Continuing along, you have a familiar uniform there in Northern Iowa. And it's a defensive tackle, Christian Boyd. You know, we already know the Saints have some intel on Northern Iowa prospects because I'm sure they did their due diligence on Trevor Penning a couple years ago. He was also a Northern Iowa guy, so they probably have those numbers saved in their phones. You know, so a school that might not be on their radar is on their radar a little bit more. You know, I think beefing up the defensive tackle position is important. If you don't go with defensive tackle at 45, Steve Geller and myself both picked Braden Fisk, the Florida State guy, at 45. So I wouldn't be surprised if you do go defensive tackle at 45 and this guy comes off. But if you're looking at defensive tackle in the third or fourth round, he would make a lot of sense. One more guy, and this is a guy whose name you might recognize because I've talked about him before, is Dylan Lobby. He is a running back out of New Hampshire. I know, it seems weird, but there's a lot of potential there. And I was very impressed at the Senior Bowl with what he was able to do. Now, he's never going to be a bell cow, a between the tackles guy who can knock people back. But he does remind me of a James White, of a Danny Woodhead. Basically, if this was 5 years ago and Tom Brady was on the Patriots, the Patriots would 100% draft this guy. Now, that's a good thing, right? You know, you think of guys like Rex Burkhead, right? Shane Vereen. He has that type of skill set that if you go back 15 years, maybe doesn't have a place in the NFL. But with the way offenses run now, a guy who can just get out and run routes like a wide receiver, which he can, is valuable. And he's going to catch people by surprise a lot faster than people think. He's a lot sturdier than people think. And I would not be surprised at all if you see the Saints drafting in the fifth or sixth round. You have 3 5th round picks. If you make all three of those, I would expect Dylan to be one of those. I talked to him at the Senior Bowl, rather, and you know, I asked him who his game reminded, who he would comp himself to, and he said Christian McCaffrey, which was funny, and I know I've said this before, but it was funny because Luke McCaffrey was standing about 15 feet away from us, Christian's brother. He's a wide receiver for Rice, and he was also at the Senior Bowl. And I asked him if he had run his Christian McCaffrey comp past Luke, and he said no, because he didn't want to have that conversation. I did tell him that I saw him more as a Danny Woodhead, and he lit up. He was like, "Thank you." You know, like, he appreciates that comp because that's the type of player he is, and that's what he wants to be in the NFL. So I'm interested. If the Saints can bring him in the fifth, sixth round, I think whoever drafts this guy is going to contribute for them at some point in the near future. Maybe not as a rookie. Maybe he ends up on a practice squad somewhere, but I really do like his game. All right, but that is it. That is the list. So we talked about Olufashana. We talked to Talia Sifuanga. The only other player that got multiple selections in my mock draft roundup, which keep in mind, it did include, it was 40 mock drafts. It did include mine and Steve's from the other day, which was a little misconstrued because, you know, I didn't want to go with an old mock draft, but this most recent one was trades, right? So Joe Alt, the only pick he got in the mock draft for the Saints was from Steve's mock because he traded up to 9 to get him. Tyler Guyton, he was picked once. That was in my mock because I traded down to get him. There was one other offensive tackle. And Marius Mims was another guy who someone put a trade in. I think they had him trading down to 22 with the Eagles. And they took a Marius Mims. So I think that's kind of what you're looking at, is there are tiers of offensive tackle prospects. If you get one of these top 3-4 guys, you feel like you're there. If you want to trade down and get one of these second tier first round guys, you can do that, but you're looking at a Tyler Guyton and a Marius Mims, someone who might not be ready to start right away. Only one defensive player was picked more than once, and it was Jared Verse, defensive end, Florida State. The other picks, Brian Thomas Jr., Brock Bowers, Jerzon Newton, and J.C. Latham was another offensive tackle who got a pick. So, you know, I think it's going to be really tough to sell people on a skill position player when week three in the season, Derek Carr can't keep his feet, getting knocked on his ass, and you're like, wow, but we really wanted to get him Brock Bowers though. So I think the mock drafts are onto something, and we'll see. You know, the Saints love doing something that's going to make people say, what, who is that guy? So I'll never put it past them, but I think that gives you a good idea, a lot of these names of the people you brought in, who could be a lot of these names. I know the Saints have 9 draft picks. I've said previously, I would bet folding money that they do not make 9 picks. Whether they make 6, whether they make 5, whether they make 8, I think there's going to be some movement, and it's just a question of who they're targeting to go get it. But all right, let's wrap up that segment. Again, I'm Jeff Nowak. This is Inside Black and Gold, our first live stream in a while. So I wanted to devote 2 segments to a mailbag. So I know we have a good number of comments in there right now. I'm going to go to break. I'm going to go through those. If you have any hot takes, anything you want to talk about, throw it in there and we'll get through as many as possible. Who dat? We'll be right back. On Inside Black and Gold. There was a good number of comments in there. I wanted to make sure I didn't miss them, but I've got a bunch starred up there, and we'll see how many we can get through. But the first one I did need to throw up was Scout Without Clout. Always got comments. He says, I don't see it with Lobby. Lobby. I need to figure out how to say his name. I keep saying Lobby. I think it's like Lobby or whatever. I need to watch more UNH highlights. But he says, it reminds me of Max Borgi, which That's a new one for me. You know, it's a dart throw, right? You know, you're looking at a guy who you see traits with that you feel like you can develop and work with. And I do think that in the Clint Kubiak offense, you do want guys who are versatile, and you want more guys who are versatile. And I think he just does that for me. And part of it is I just, you know, he's a UNH guy. I like seeing these smaller school guys do well and get a chance. I think in most cases, that's what the Senior Bowl is about, right? You get some of the top end prospects. But the much bigger aspect of it is you put these smaller school guys on a field with bigger school guys. You know, maybe not the top end first round guys, but you got Ohio State, you got Alabama, right? You got LSU guys out there, and you get to see these players compete. And that's what stood out to me, is you watch these guys play on the same field at the same level, actually compete with each other, which is something that doesn't happen at the combine or a pro day. And you're like, it's just an opportunity to sit back and kind of say, okay, you know, that guy looks like he belongs here. That guy, maybe not, but this guy does. And that's kind of how I came away from it with Lobe. So take it for what it is. I just, when I saw the way he played and what he was able to do, he stood out to me immediately, and so you see him get a visit with the Saints, and I think that's a good indicator that they saw the same thing. Either way, I appreciate it. And 992RAS says, for a late-round wide receiver, I really like Brendan Rice. I don't have a ton of insight on Brendan Rice, but I'll let that stand. If you have Brendan Rice takes, throw him in the chat, and we can talk about him. Pelicans Nola here says, if we don't pick the best player available, that's how we ended up with Marcus Davenport, Peyton Turner, and Trevor Penning. All of them are reaches. See, I disagree with that. because, you know, if you're not going best player available, you are typically just going with what the board tells you. And so when you trade up to whatever it was, 18, 15 for Marcus Davenport, that's not going best player available. That's going to get the guy you want on the board. Going best player available is typically going to be you sit in your draft slot and you let the board come to you, and whoever is the best player at whatever position, you're looking at it. Now, you know, when I talked to Matt Miller from ESPN, I asked him how he felt about that, and he kind of agrees. It's like best player available is kind of a myth, because every team will say, hey, we're going to draft the best player available. But in most, if not all cases, you're really talking about we're going to take the best player available at one of these two, three positions, right? Because need does have to factor in. It just does. You know, you're kidding yourself if you don't think that the Saints are looking at this draft the same way as everybody else, saying there's a lot of tackles in there. There's a lot of tackles. And you look at your roster and you're like, we don't have a lot of tackles. And the ones we do are breaking. So, I mean, it's tough because, yeah, Brock Bowers is probably the best player available. When you talk about if he gets to 14, when you talk about the scouting, when you talk about, you know, the profile, the grade you have on him, I'm sure he's at the top of their list. But I just find it really, really difficult to do that. And you know, I wouldn't complain, right? Like, oh, the Giants drafted Saquon Barkley at number two. I think most Giants fans would be like, yeah, that was kind of dumb. They shouldn't have done that. But at the same time, everyone was excited. You were buying a Saquon jersey, and he lived up to the hype. They sucked. He lived up to the hype. They sucked as a team. And that's not what you want to be. That's not where you want to be as a team. But at the same time, I think there is some value in getting the fans excited. And, you know, probably the only guy the Saints could pick in the first round that would legitimately have people lining up to go watch is Brock Bowers. So I don't know. Take that with a grain of salt. Do with that what you will. If their goal is to get people excited, then Brock is the guy. But again, it's it's really tough. You know, like I think BPA is a myth to some extent, and you'd be crazy to not try to fill your void, in my opinion, at right tackle in this first round, not necessarily at left tackle. You can draft a guy who could play either position. It's you don't want to pigeonhole them into saying, hey, this guy is definitely a right tackle, this guy's definitely a left tackle. If you can project to move, you can play both sides. But I find it really tough to see them getting out of this draft out of tackle. Either way, I appreciate the comment. And there's Justin Pasquale. He's saying the same thing, right? BPA at a position of need. And, you know, you can make the argument that the Saints need a tight end. Genuinely, like we talk about Juwan Johnson. I do like Juwan Johnson. I think that what you saw last year was maybe not the best reflection of what he should be able to do over the course of a season. You still have a former UDFA that you converted from wide receiver as your star tight end. And that's not, you know, like Adam Trautman was a third round pick. If you threw a third round pick at a tight end last year, you could have ended up with, you know, Luke Musgrave. I think he might have gone late second round. You could have ended up with a Tyler Kroft. You could have ended up with a guy who had kind of elite traits, who had a top 75 grade at tight end on your roster that you're developing over time. Saints didn't do that. Saints avoided the tight end position entirely, which annoyed the hell out of me. But, you know, it also shows that they are not going to make their draft board based on, hey, all of these players at this really deep position are there. We got to go get one. Because if it was, they would have gone and got it last year. But I do want to see them add talent to that tight end room. And maybe that is what they do. Pelicans Nola says, Mickey Loomis, you have to give the Who Dat Nation something to get excited for with the number 14 pick. You know, and again, that goes back to, hey, if you want to get someone excited, like I'd love to hear anyone else's suggestion of who they could draft that would legitimately kind of electrify the fan base in a way that you haven't seen from a draft pick in the last several years. And I can't think of anyone other than that. I mean, obviously if you traded up and went and got one of these top quarterbacks, maybe if they took a Michael Penix, then you could say, hey, there's some excitement there. But I do think that Brock is probably the only guy if that's your goal. Let's see. Die92 RAS again. Saints need to draft the best O-lineman they can with at least two picks. I don't hate that. I mean, I agree with that. If they went offensive tackle at 14 and 45, I don't think anyone would be like, ah, they're crazy. Why would they do that? But we'll see. If the best player is left tackle or right tackle, you got to take him. Agree. Scout Without Clout says, I hope it's J.C. Latham, right tackle, Alabama. And if you're still here, if you want to expand upon that. You know, I think that it's tough because there's so many. I think you're looking at 7 or 8 first-round tackle prospects. You know, in my mock draft, I got the 8th one when I traded back to 24, and that was Tyler Guyton. He's a fringe first-round pick, but I do think he's a first-round pick. But yeah, I mean, you could rank these guys any way you want. It's going to be different from team to team. It's going to be different from offense to offense. One offense needs your tackle to pull a lot more than the other. You need a bit more athletic profile. One is really interested in pass pro. So Fashanu's the guy that you're like, that's your gold standard. It's tough. J.C. Latham is kind of in the middle for me. I have a hard time gauging it. And it's always difficult for me to gauge Alabama offensive line talent because he's going to be surrounded by top-end offensive line talent. So it's kind of like an Ohio State player on offense. It's like, I don't know exactly how to gauge Marvin Harrison Jr. just because there's so much talent around him that does it make his life easier? Like, is he going to be a guy when he is the focal point of an NFL offense going to be able to stand out the way that he did in college? Same for an offensive lineman. It's kind of the inverse of the small school problem. Like, you watch Trevor Penning beat up on, you know, these like 240-pound defensive ends, not even 215-pound defensive ends at Northern Iowa, and you're like, okay, but is he good enough to project to the NFL level? And is his technique a big enough issue that it's going to take him multiple years to develop? And I think you've found out the answer to that. But it's kind of the opposite with Alabama because they're just bullying people all the time. But it's interesting. Scout Without Clout. Rice is a good deep threat for teams that miss on Brian Thomas. They might like him. I think we already have 2 deep threats, though. We probably get a slot wide receiver or a prototypical X. You know, Brian Thomas is interesting to me. I think Brian Thomas is a guy that the Saints, if they were drafting later in the first round, would seriously consider. I think he does a lot of the things you need your wide receiver to do. But I kind of see Brian Thomas as a different kind of deep threat as Rashid Shaheed, Chris Olave. And I think he can do a lot more over the middle of the field. I think his size is a bit more impressive. He's got kind of that long stride speed as opposed to kind of that quick twitch speed that I would give to Chris Olave and Rashid Shaheed. So I would honestly think Brian Thomas if he was on the board at 45, he'd be really intriguing to me. I don't think he will be. But, you know, I don't know if you can ever have too many deep threats. I don't think you're going to look at the wide receiver position and say, we already got guys who can go downfield. We don't need to get another guy who can do that. It's more about, can they run the whole route tree? I'd also like to see you get a little more unpredictable with how you use Rashid Shaheed. So if you have another guy who can take on that role and you can shift Rashid into the slot and let him run more over the middle of the field and get involved in the screen game, and again, use that punt returner ability in space with some yards after catch, I would love to see it. Right now, I just don't think you have the personnel to do that. And so, however you add a guy, I wouldn't hate some redundancy there. Mitchell Milano says he enjoyed the Wood is Insane major pause, which, I'm not going to be mad at it. Here's another one from Scout Without Clout. Braden Fisk, Marshawn Neal, and Tavondre Sweat seem most realistic options in round 2, all run stuffers. I agree. I think that this team became painfully aware in the 2022 season specifically, that they had allowed the interior of the defense to disintegrate a little bit, to turn into a weakness as opposed to a strength, because they just hadn't drafted the position the way you had in the past, right? The way you look at guys in the second, third round, David Onyemata, right? They took a Sheldon Rankins at number 12 overall. It was a priority for this team. And then they kind of let it fester, and suddenly you're looking at David Onyemata and Shai Tuttle, an older David Onyemata, and they're just not getting the job done. And so you spent a first-round pick on Brian Bazee last year. I think that went a long way toward rebuilding that. But, you know, at 45, I wouldn't be surprised if you end up with Tavondre Sweat or Braden Fisk, or, you know, Marshawn Nealand would be a DN prospect. But, you're still addressing the pass rush or the run defense in some way. And I just think this team understands that if they don't sort out the defensive line, they're not going to go very far. And this defense is just going to kind of corrode around everybody. So I agree. I think, like, there's a reason Steve and I both took Braden Fisk in our last mock, and it's because he just does the things that I think this team likes. But all right, let's wrap up this segment of Inside Black and Gold. This is our first live mailbag segment. We are going to come back with another segment to answer more questions. I know there's more comments in there, and we will be right back. Inside Black and Gold. Question we had here that kind of goes back to last segment. Let me find it. Justin Pasquale says, would you rather have Leggett or Coleman in the second round if the Saints went that path? Both seem to like they have ability to replace Mike Thomas. You know, Xavier Leggett was a guy I took at 45 in our second mock draft. And if he had been there, I might have taken him again in our most recent one. Obviously, I don't think he was. I think he went a pick or two earlier than that. So, I mean, just in terms of I've gotten a much closer look at Xavier Leggett to kind of understand what I'm looking at. That's probably who I would err toward. You know, Keon Coleman, I think the Saints have gotten a really good look at him. Obviously, they had him in for a visit. I don't think he'll be there. I think Leggett has a guy that might fall down from where his peak draft stock would be. Whereas I think Coleman's going to see that stock rise. And in part because, you know, when you're on that prolific of an offense, it helps you out. You know, South Carolina, for better or worse, was not a very good team. And it's not going to show Xavier well. That said, I don't think you could go wrong with either of those guys. Xavier has that sweet South Carolina accent that I love. But you know, I'd probably go with Leggett just because I think the size is more legit. Like Keon's a bigger guy, but you put him next to a lot of wide receivers and you'd be like, okay, that's a wide receiver. Xavier, you know, he's built like a truck. And that's kind of what I need. And because that's always, you know, what Mike Thomas was best at, was just being more physical than anybody else. And we'll see. But either way, I don't hate either of those picks. If they went with either of those guys at 45, and you can make a significant argument that they do need to add wide receiver talent at 45, I'd be okay with it. But I would land on Leggett. Scout Without Cloud says, one question from what you've seen slash heard of Sal DeVary. Can he win the starting left guard spot? Can he? Yes. Will he? I think that's a big ask. And it's just because you didn't see him on the field at all last year. And it's not his fault. You know, James Hurst was healthy all season, right? So you didn't really need to get that deep in the weeds at the guard spot the way you had to at tackle. I think you need to see him compete for that job in camp. We talked about this in a previous episode. And I do think that this team is, you know, they're not down on Nick, right? They drafted him kind of knowing that they were going to have him focus on guard. You know, he played tackle in college and he played multiple offensive line spots, but he was primarily a tackle in college. And they knew that they were going to have to take a little time and focus him on guard and have him pick up the skills that he maybe was able to bypass in college because he was at Old Dominion and the talent level he was blocking was not as high. So I think it's just a question, and that's what this team is going to look at, is how far along is he? Does he pick up the skills that they need him to pick up? Can he polish the areas that he struggled in? And if he can do that, then yes, because I don't think James Hurst is a particularly impressive starting left guard. I think he's probably below replacement level at left guard. And the reason he's on the team is versatility and the fact that he's a good locker room guy. So you could beat that guy out. you know, James Hurst is a guy who was a backup most of his career. He probably should still be a backup now, a high quality backup, but a backup nonetheless. So, you know, I think they're going to give him a chance. I think Nick's going to have a chance to compete. Even if he doesn't win that job out of camp, I think he ends up being kind of your first in line backup, the way Landon Young has kind of developed into that first in line backup. And then if you do have an injury at guard, then yes, I think he could take over that job and probably own it. But I think that's the process that you'll go with, is you'll start with the veteran. And then if the younger player takes over and plays better, then you stick with him. But for now, I think it's just you got to see what he has in camp and go from there. Mitchell Milano says, Penning can develop. I have no idea why we are acting as if his career has been decided. Yeah, I mean, I agree with that. Now, there's good reason to be skeptical of a guy who was not able to get on the field in year two. If the Saints had not fired Doug Marrone, I would say I would be much more heavily in the, okay, you got to just find another option because this ain't it. The fact that they fired the offensive line coach tells you a lot about how they felt that room was being handled, and particularly the development of young players, in my opinion. So I do think that they're hopeful that John Benton gets in there and this new staff gets in there and they're able to wring a much more productive season out of Trevor Penning. I think you're going to let him play through his struggles this year more so than last year, assuming he wins that job out of camp. And you're hopeful that, you know, like, and this is not just to say this, he was dealing with a torn Lisfranc tendon last year, Lisfranc, whatever, and had to have surgery. So he lost that entire offseason. That, you know, you talk about a leap from year one to year two. That comes through playing, but it also comes from having a full NFL offseason that's not interrupted by pro days, that's not interrupted by a draft, that's not interrupted by moving your entire life from Iowa to New Orleans. You know, you just get to focus on football for the first time and focus on getting better and fixing issues. And, you know, the players that improve are the ones that do that, right? The players that show up in year two and look a lot better are the ones that spend a lot of time in the offseason working on the things that they were unable to work on prior to their rookie season. Trevor couldn't do that. And he got into camp and he just looked like the same guy because he was the same guy. I think that's what this team is. That's the glass half full take on Trevor Penning is he has all off season with a healthy foot. And hopefully he can get some private coaching. He can get to where he needs to be and keep Derek Carr alive this season in a way that he was unable to last year over the first several games. You know, you talk about 11 sacks through two and a half games. That's what Derek had. And they finished with, I think, 34 sacks allowed on the season. So you can kind of do the math there and say you allowed 11 through your first, 10 quarters, 10 and a half quarters. And then you allowed 24 through your final, however many games, 14 games. So it's clear that taking him out did help things along. I don't know. That's going to be the biggest issue I have is if he can't get it done, you can't force it. But we'll see. Either way, I agree in the sense that a lot of people have already heaped dirt on Trevor Penning as if this guy going into his third year just has no chance whatsoever of becoming a quality NFL player. And I just don't think that's necessarily true. Justin Pasquale says, also, we've got to go get Theo Johnson in the mid round. Love his tape and what he can bring. You know, Theo's funny. And the tight end class is really funny this year. You know, Mike Dottiglia talked about this recently. You know, last year was probably, if not the best, one of the top five tight end classes of all time in terms of the depth, right? You're talking about guys, you know, Sam Laporta, was the first guy off the board, I believe. And he was, you know, but then you had Luke Musgrave, Tyler Croft, Dalton Kincaid, you know, Darnell Washington slipped. He was the last of that group to get picked. And even he, I think, was a third rounder. There was just so much talent at the tight end position. This year, it's Brock Bowers, it's Jatavion Sims, from Texas. People know who I'm talking about. He's probably the only other day two pick. And then you're talking about a lot of day three guys. You know, maybe a team falls in love with Theo Johnson's traits and takes him in the third round. But I think more likely you're just going to see several fourth, fifth, sixth round tight ends. And Theo's in that group. And the reason I find Theo interesting is, you know, a team's going to fall in love with what he's able to do physically and probably overdraft him. Probably, you know, if he was projected to go in the fifth round, he'd go in the fourth round because there's so many things there to like that kind of fly in the face of the fact that there's really no tape to get excited about. The stats aren't there to get excited about. But, you know, he's big, he's athletic, he can block, he can go out and catch passes, he needs to work on his route running. But for a fifth, sixth round tight end, I think that's value. So I agree. If they don't go Brock early on, I think you could see them target a guy like a Theo Johnson. There's several other tight ends that they could look at. Even like a Johnny Wilson from Florida State. You know, they did love turning Juwan Johnson into a tight end. Maybe they look at Johnny Wilson and he's 6'6", whatever, 230, and they take him with the idea of converting him to a tight end. So he's another guy you could look at. All right, going back to J.C. Latham, I asked Scout Without Clout why he would prefer J.C. Latham, and he says, he's so big with elite balance, has monster man-mauling reps in the run game, that's good alliteration, with mobility that exceeds what should be possible at his size. Evan Neal bust might make Latham fall too, fingers crossed. And there was somebody else that pointed out, you know, I go on this long rant about how Alabama just bullies people at the offensive line on the offensive line, but that really wasn't the case last year. And there's a good argument to be made that roster was falling off, and maybe that's why Nick Saban decided to retire. He's going to blame NIL, but you know, that roster was not the loaded with talent roster we have grown accustomed to seeing, at least not at the level of winning championships each and every year. So yeah, maybe you're right. Maybe I'm overreacting to kind of my feelings about Alabama always just bullying people. But I felt the same way about Clemson when they were winning all those titles. It's really just tough to gauge a team when there's that much talent. It's like, for example, the quarterback. Like, you look at Bryce Young, right? You're like, okay, how good is the quarterback when he's throwing to, you know, first round wide receivers every week, right? And he has this top end offensive line. CJ Stroud, I think one of the reasons you look at him and say, hey, why wasn't he a higher level prospect? Why didn't people like him as much? And I think that's part of it too, is because every year Ohio State has the top wide receiver. So is it the quarterback? Is it the wide receiver? You know, I do think it's really interesting that there's three top 10 wide receivers in this draft. There's several first round wide receivers, but you're talking about Rome Odunze. Michael Penix was a Heisman candidate. Is it Rome Odunze who's the star, or is it Michael Penix, or is it a combination? Malik Nabers, Jaden Daniels won the Heisman Trophy. Is Malik Nabers really that good, or is Jaden Daniels really that good, or is it the combination? Marvin Harrison and, you know, whoever else. But the point is, you know, it can be that simple as they're both really good. You look at Ja'Marr Chase and Joe Burrow. I'm curious to see what Ja'Marr Chase's career might have been like if he didn't land with Joe Burrow, but he did, and they hit the ground running. So I don't know. I think as you kind of go through this, you do have to kind of weigh teams against individual talent. That said, you know, I think you're right. I mean, J.C. Latham, I don't think you would go wrong with any of these offensive line prospects. It's just a matter of picking the right one. It's kind of like the wide receiver draft in 2022, where it was like Chris Olave, Garrett Wilson, Drake London. You couldn't go wrong with any of them. They've all been really good. And it's just a matter of, okay, who do you have rated the highest? And you go get them. And the Saints, I would argue, came away with the top one, even though they did not pick the top one. I think Garrett Wilson and Drake London both came off before Chris Olave was picked. So it'll go from there. But all right, let's move on. Mitchell Milano says, also, we keep looking at this just as a position thing. Look at it beyond that. DA said he wants to play physical offense. That is not Fashanu's game. No, and I think, again, I think that you're overreacting to the kind of plug and play aspect that you can get out of Olu that maybe you wouldn't get out of some other guys. But I do, you know, this draft more than any, you know, every year we go into this and we evaluate and we say, well, this is what the Saints have done previously and this is what they've targeted. And until we see a couple drafts with the Clint Kubiak system in play, it's going to be tough to know how that changes, right? What do you prioritize differently than you did in the past? And, you know, do you prioritize, you know, athletic tight ends, right? Is that something that you look at this offense as Clint Kubiak and you say, I think we need a higher pedigree tight end to grease the skids on a lot of these concepts? And if that's the case, then maybe you do go for a Brock Bowers, or, you know, you want a more mauling offensive line. And so you wouldn't look at Fashanu for that. So I do think there's a good point to be made there. And DA did kind of surreptitiously kind of throw in, hey, you know, all these pass catchers, you know, there's only one way to interpret that, and it's that he's including wide tight ends in that, because there's, you know, you could say receiving running backs, but I think if you're not saying wide receivers and you're saying pass catchers, it means you're talking about the tight end position. H-Town Creole. Saints should get the best player available because the team is in rebuild denial. Will Campbell and Jones are leaving LSU next season. Rebuild denial. That's a good one. I haven't heard that before. Rebuild denial. What stage of grief is rebuild denial? Is that the third or fourth stage? But yeah, I mean, I land on this differently every time I think about it. And like, what is a rebuild? And what are you looking for to rebuild for you not to deny it? Right? Like, what are the Saints doing that says we're not trying to get younger? And I don't know. I kind of feel like they are. I kind of feel like that is what they're showing you by not getting aggressive in free agency, letting David Onyemata walk last year, right? Drafting a first round defensive tackle and signing a couple younger defensive tackles in Colin Saunders, Nathan Shepard, right? You're talking about a team that everyone's like, hey, why are they thinking about trading Marshon Lattimore? I mean, that's a soft rebuild. And, you know, I think when you talk about rebuild denial, it's not about just a static rebuild of like, hey, we're not good enough here. We're probably not a title contender right now, so we don't want to act like one. And we want to be a little bit more judicious about how we dole out free agency dollars, you know, how we spend our assets in the draft, you know, how we evaluate younger players versus veterans who, you know, maybe you have to play to learn versus have a little higher floor at this point, but they could reach their ceiling with playing time. And I do think the Saints are there. The issue is I don't think there's a lot of people who probably wouldn't accept that as a rebuild because their definition of rebuild is tear everything down to the studs and literally just start fresh with rookies and second year players and third year players. And see, I don't like that. I don't want to see the team do that. So I'm never going to say, hey, they should, because I just don't think that's, you know, I've watched teams do that. I've watched teams be bad. I've watched teams be bad, not, you want to say intentionally, but they've set up situations where they're probably going to be bad and they succeed at being bad. And I don't know, as a fan of a team, you don't want to be watching your team do that, right? Like, we talk about getting the fan base excited. No one's getting excited for this team to lose 15 games. You know, maybe you go get a quarterback. Maybe you don't. Maybe you draft Bryce Young. Maybe you get a quarterback that is a bust because this team has never shown the ability to go draft a quarterback. Like, so I don't know. I think you could go about it in a variety of ways. But I mean, Will Campbell and Jones, if there's one thing I know about the Saints, it is that I should never get too excited about LSU players in the draft. Even now that they're willing to take some LSU players with Foster Moreau, Tyrann Mathieu, I still don't think they're going to draft guys just because they're close by. Scout without clout. We get one or two more in here. Says, if we simply draft offensive tackle well this year, defensive end well next year, and QB year after, we could be back in contention. I think it's too early to say whether our rebuild is going well or poorly yet. Yeah, right. I agree with that. I do think they are trying to soft rebuild. Now, the success at which you do it is another question. But I agree. I think this is a year where playoffs would be a victory. And I think you can get to the playoffs if things break your way in a way they haven't in the past. And if Derek Carr is more comfortable and if you can build out the offensive line in front of him in a way that is helpful. But I do think they are in a rebuild. You know, it's kind of like when you're looking at the economy and you're like, are we in a recession? I'm poor, but is everyone else poor? Are we technically in a recession? Or is it just like, you know, everyone's gas prices are really high and I have to buy Wonder Bread instead of the other bread? I don't know. That's kind of what it is with a rebuild. Like, I wish there was like a governing entity that could be like, rebuild, so that we could all just stop debating about whether it's happening or not. So here's one we can close on, because I disagree with it. Roderick Dewey says, you can't truly rebuild with an aging quarterback. And I don't know. I kind of feel like the opposite. I feel like you can't really rebuild unless you have an aging quarterback, because otherwise you're just screwing over a kid, right? Like, it's really difficult to rebuild around a rookie quarterback. Like, look at what the Panthers are doing. The Panthers, like, the Texans got really lucky with how they were able to pull their situation off. But one of the reasons it worked as well as it did is that rebuild started 2 years before they drafted their rookie quarterback, right? So they had pieces in place. And Davis Mills was the sacrificial lamb, or whoever else was there was the sacrificial lamb. By the time C.J. Stroud stood behind that offensive line, it was a really good offensive line. By the time he was throwing to his receivers, you had quality receivers there for him to throw to. You know, they had a not a great defense, but a good defense. Obviously, they had the rookie head coach. And the only way you get there is by going with a veteran quarterback. So I would argue that you are actually in a very good space to rebuild now if you continue to do that. Whereas if you go draft Jaden Daniels, the Commanders, say the Commanders draft Jaden Daniels, that team's not ready to win. So you are committing your franchise quarterback to 1, 2, 3 seasons of just relentless misery. And that's tough to build around. And by the time you build up your roster again, have you stunted your quarterback's growth? And he's never going to be a guy that can get you more than 7-8 wins. And at that point, you're stuck in the middle. So I don't know. I think you're talking about Derek Carr, and you're saying if they were trying to rebuild, they wouldn't have Derek Carr right now. And I disagree with that. I think you very much can rebuild with Derek Carr, but you have to be willing to draft a quarterback behind him and develop a quarterback behind him. And that's what I'm not sure the Saints are willing to do at this point. Maybe they are. If they go and take Michael Penix in the second round, maybe that's their signal to you. If they don't, then it becomes tougher. And you're looking at Jake Haener and being like, yeah, maybe. I don't think so. But I think it's an interesting question. Roderick says, it works for Peyton Manning. Okay, yeah, sure. It works for Peyton Manning. But I don't think that you're going to get very far if you base all of your NFL takes around, like, oh, if you just take Peyton Manning, you'll be fine. I think the Saints would be happy if they could find a way to draft Peyton Manning. They'd be good. But no, and you're right in the sense that Peyton really struggled in his rookie year. You know, he had one of the worst rookie years of any quarterback you'll find, or at least any quarterback that ended up starting for 10 plus years. But he is the exception, not the rule. And one more. The only way you keep an aging QB is only if you start invest in a new one. Like, we're on the same page here. Right. So if you're someone who really wants the Saints to rebuild, the answer is not cut Derek Carr and commit to losing. The answer is bring in a quarterback that ideally could start in 2 years. Right. Look at the teams that have been successful at replacing veteran quarterbacks with young quarterbacks. What have they done? Draft Pat Mahomes and let him sit behind Alex Smith for a couple years. Those Chiefs teams made the playoffs. They weren't good enough to win in the playoffs, but they made the playoffs. Those were good teams. So you rebuilt around Alex Smith and allowed Pat Mahomes to get better. And when Pat Mahomes showed up, he obviously was already ready to win. And then, you know, obviously if everyone could draft Pat Mahomes, you'd be great. Jordan Love, another example. Aaron Rodgers, another example. When you can do that, you have a much better chance to execute a rebuild. So we'll see. But I think we'll end with Justin Pasquale. If the Saints nail this draft, how many wins do you see them getting this year? So it's a good question. By nailed it, you know, I'd probably use the 2017 draft as kind of the standard bearer for a team nailing a draft. And so with that, you would say, you know, at least 2 starters and then a third player who is making a big impact behind a starter. So in that case, it would have been in the 2017, you actually got 3 starters and then that other guy, because you got Marshawn Lattimore, Ryan Ramczyk, Alvin Kamara, and Marcus Williams. So, you know, if the Saints were able to pull 3 starters out of this draft, which would be nearly impossible because, you know, they only have 2 picks in the top 4 in the top 150. Let's say 2 starters. Let's say they get 2 starters and kind of that depth guy, which, you know, 14, 45, and then you trade up to 3 and you get a guy and you hit on. In that case, you draft a right tackle and he comes in and he plays right away. Trevor Penning develops and is a quality left tackle. At 45, you take, say Keon Coleman, and he comes in and he catches 40 passes, 5 touchdowns, and he has a really solid impact as a rookie on defense. You know, Brian Brzee takes a step forward. You trade Marshawn Lattimore and you put Alante Taylor outside and he really thrives there. Or you keep Marshawn Lattimore and Alante Taylor stays in the slot. It improves. If you know, Jordan Howden, Jonathan Abram kind of, and Tyrann Mathieu kind of bridge that veteran to rookie to young players safety group, and they play effectively. If the kicking game, the punting game, if everything went perfectly, I think this team's ceiling is 12 wins. And again, that's if everything goes perfectly. No major injuries at positions you can't replace. You know, no double doinks in London, you know, stuff like that. Stuff that, you know, those games that could go either way go against you. No balls, no drops in the end zone for a game-tying touchdown. Stuff like that. Like, if all of that stuff goes your way, I think you're looking at a 12-win team. Now, somewhere in the middle of that is reality. And that's why, you know, the 7.5, we can talk about that for a second. The 7.5 over-under, a lot of it is sentiment. It's not necessarily analysis. And I think you're looking at a team that will be pushing to be in the same area it was last year. And that's what's frustrating, is I don't see a route to getting much better. That said, last year's team probably should have won 10 games. And if those breaks go your way this year, the way they did in last year, say in Green Bay, say against the Jaguars, right? Then I think you're probably hoping to get back to 9 and 10 wins. If things go terribly, you flub on the draft, Trevor Penningkamp can't hack it at left tackle. Your right tackle is a rookie who, even if he's playing well, is still a rookie who's struggling. Derek Carr's getting rocked every time he drops back. Alvin Kamara shows his age. Kendre Miller gets hurt again. All this stuff goes against you. You're probably looking at a 4-win team. And, you know, I was joking with Steve about this. It's like, he was like, man, people will be so pissed if that happens. And I can't help but feel like, yes, people will be annoyed throughout the course of a 4-win season, but then there'll be a lot of people who'll be like, yeah, but that's the type of season that would get the coach fired. And if you were of the people that wants to see that happen, then you probably won't be mad. So I don't know. I do think that that's kind of the ring you kind of sit in of, okay, are you going to stay mired in this mediocrity where you show no signs of improvement, get another 9-win season, miss the playoffs on a tiebreaker, or are you just going to kind of bite the bullet and be bad? And I think this season, you could go either way, because there's this, you need depth and you need a shield from being that terrible team. And that's what's kind of gone away for the Saints over the last 2 years, is that shield that's kept you from that 5-4 or 5-win season, which you have not had since 2005. That's thinner and thinner and thinner by the day. And eventually you're going to break through that, and it's just going to all fall off a cliff. I don't know if they're there right now, but they're getting close. And that's where I'll end it, on that super positive note. Again, I'm Jeff Nowak. This is Inside Black and Gold. Thanks, everyone, for hanging out. I know it's kind of a weird time, but I did want to get a live stream at you, and I think we got it. We got it done. Thanks, everyone who hung around, everyone who dropped in a comment. If you haven't subscribed yet, please do that. Ring the bell on YouTube. You know, we've been kind of all over the map with episodes, so hopefully we can get on a little bit better of a rhythm as we get into the draft, which is going to throw everything out of whack again. But hey, that's the world we live in. Who dat? Go Saints. Peace, y'all. Peace.